Hey, this is Savannah from the Faithful Project, and I'm so excited to tell you that a brand new single from our 2021 live recording just released. The Detour is a vulnerable song inspired by Elizabeth in the Bible. We often focus on the end of her story when her hope was fulfilled, so it's easy to forget how many years she spent waiting. That's why I'm so thankful my friends Sarah Kroger, Tamar Chip, and Crystal Wells wrote this song for anyone experiencing a painful detour, setback, or season of waiting. This song doesn't deny the pain. Detours feel defeating, but we hope it reawakens an inner strength that comes as you hope in God.
Welcome to the Faithful Podcast. I'm your host, Keely Scott, with Compassion International. The Word of God is filled with the voices of mothers, daughters, sisters, and wives. Each of their stories shows us different sides of God's kindness, love, and faithfulness, and how that faithfulness is just as active and present today as it was thousands of years ago. The Faithful Project is a gathering of female poets, songwriters, authors, and storytellers, creating a space for them to dive into the stories of the ancient and mysterious women of the Word, and to learn and share about their own stories in the process. We are so glad you've joined us today as we speak of what we've seen. In this episode, we sit down with the co-founder of She Reads Truth, Amanda Bible Williams, the founder of Grace Laced, Ruth Cho Simons, and singer-songwriter Taylor Lindhart, to discuss the story of Mary and Martha from Luke 10. The three of them discuss how many of us find ourselves in the role of Martha, anxiously looking to our responsibilities rather than Jesus for fulfillment. Coming out of an anxious year, Amanda, Rachel, and Taylor remind us, like Jesus taught, what it looks like to choose the better portion. Let's dive in.
I'm Ruth Jo Simons. I am an artist and an author and a founder of GraceLaced.com. And more importantly, I am a mom to six boys. My oldest is 18. My youngest is 7. And I've been married to my husband, Troy, for 22 years, who in previous seasons was a pastor and a headmaster of a school. And so we've been in ministry most of our lives, but currently we are in ministry together full-time with Grace Laced and the work that we do through writing and the business. So...
And raising those cubs.
Yes, those man cubs.
I was going to say, I feel like the headmaster skill would come in handy for like a house full of boys.
Absolutely. And that's one of the reasons why we chose a full-time homeschool. It's not necessarily for everybody, but it was the right fit for our family.
So. Do you loan him out?
I'm telling you, he's teaching philosophy, Latin, and Spanish in a co-op on Fridays. And he's really the greatest teacher. And I sometimes think he should just start offering classes. So
I feel like we could benefit from Troy's parenting and teaching and headmastering wisdom.
Well, I know it's not what this is about, but goodness, I think the thing I love most is when we don't separate sacred and secular. Education is discipleship. Discipleship happens all the time, whether you're a homeschooler or not. And so, I love that. But for another day, another podcast.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, that's good. Okay, we'll put a pin in that. Parking lot it, as we say. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm Amanda Bible Williams, and I am a mom of 4, and my husband is not a former headmaster or teacher, but we are attempting to homeschool our kids. It is the first year we've done this, and probably the last. So, talk more about that later.
You're doing amazing.
But, I run a company called She Reads Truth with my friend Rachel. And we invite people to read the Bible, and it's fun. It's a fun job. It's a weird job. It's weird to call it a job, but that's what we do, and it's super fun. Yeah. That's what I do from here in Nashville. How about you?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm Taylor Lindhart. I am a musician, singer-songwriter. I'm one half of a worship duo with my one of my best friends in the world, Jess Ray. We're in a band called Mission House. So I also found a way, like both of you, to work with one of my best friends. It's pretty great. Don't you feel like you just kind of cheated life? Like you found the hack?
Uh-huh.
Like,
cool.
It's also really challenging sometimes.
It's really challenging, but it's also a relief.
It's
to like have a buddy to do to work with a buddy.
Yeah, like when I realized
second half.
You don't have to do this stuff all by yourself.
No. Yeah. Which it is hard.
Yeah.
But
it's also a joy. So I love doing that. And I also I also release music as a solo artist too. And I love doing that. And I work for a church in North Carolina.
Just a few things. What do you do in your spare time?
Oh, man. Well, I have a dog and we just look at each other. She's old.
That's nice.
We just sit in the living room and just kind of hang out together. No, man. Well, yeah, spare time. I guess now.
We kind of have some.
I know. Well, that's funny, right? When your job, we could probably all say this, but when your job is something you love doing, I think, like, I was realizing the other day, I need a hobby, you know, like I just, because I love what I do. It's kind of what my passion, but I thought maybe I should take up a hobby.
I've been learning to embroider. Is that how you say it? Embroider?
Yes.
Embroider. It's hard to say.
Have you? I'm so impressed.
I just, a lady on Instagram, I just watch her video and then I try, and she had like a free pattern. It's fine. It's going fine. It's not going great, but it's going okay.
But it's so good for
you. But it's so different than anything else that I usually do with my brain and my downtime.
And I think as creatives, since you invest in a different discipline, like if I, you know, I've been playing the piano again. We moved our grand piano up from the basement to the main floor. And so every night after dinner, when the kids are doing dishes, I've been playing again and trying to sing a little bit along. But it's good to it's good to cross disciplines because it actually encourages you and helps you like think outside of the box. Mm-hmm. And so,
and it's okay to not be great at it.
Yes.
It's actually a delight to be amateur at some things.
And that's what I didn't know. Like all my life, I was like, just try things that you're going to be good at. And now I'm like, no. The trying is actually what's going to cause you to grow in so many, you know, if I'm going to be a good businesswoman, a good artist, a good writer, I cannot only look at other people who are doing that discipline or that work. I've got to just like be inspired by wrestling a different discipline altogether and learning how to enjoy opera, for example, which I don't naturally enjoy, but some, you know, just learning other things. And so embroidery.
Yes. Well, we'll report back.
Yeah. I taught guitar lessons for a long time to children. And, you know, when you're pretty proficient at something and you're teaching a child, you can forget. It was helpful for me. I was actually been learning piano too. And it's been really good to come back to that place of being a beginner at something. And you're like, it's difficult. I keep messing up and for I'm not very impressive at this.
Isn't it great to not be? I mean, like, because truth is we're all not very impressed. Like because we try to stay in the lane where we can impress, you know, or like only make public the things we feel that are impressive when like that's a lot of times that's not where the magic happens, you know, and it feels really relevant to like what we're about to read and talk about.
Yeah.
You know, because the story of Mary and Martha and with, you know, Jesus coming to your house. I mean, if Jesus, I saw a meme, all these COVID memes are just the way to my heart. And one that was like, you know, I never thought I would miss panic cleaning my house before guests came over, but here we are. Like nobody ever comes over. And so my house is never clean because I never have to panic clean. But I imagine if Jesus, the Son of God, was coming to my house, I would like majorly panic clean my house. Mm-hmm. And so like that's the story, right? That's what Martha was doing, the stuff that needed to get done, even when Jesus was there. Mm-hmm. And then, because, you know, somebody's got to make the food and do the stuff, clean the dishes. But Mary was sitting and listening to Jesus teach. And then there was kind of a sisterly altercation.
Yes.
Shall we say?
Well, so, you know, we're talking about two accounts and two stories of Mary and Martha. And I think when we talk about Mary, sometimes Mary seems like the good girl, the one who makes all the right choices. Mm-hmm. But in another light, you also realize Mary's the one that kind of like is unashamedly passionate and like really like doing that thing that doesn't feel cool for us. Like sometimes we like to, like you said, stay in our lane, seem like we're real organized and we're good at what we're doing and not wiping, you know, our Jesus's feet with our hair and and not sitting there literally just like ogling over every word he says. But that's what she does. She literally lets her heart just sit there and receive from him. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I feel like I'm always talking about Martha and I don't sit and talk about Mary as much. And so This is going to be a good conversation. I'm curious to know how you all respond to
it. I'm really excited to talk about Mary with you guys specifically. And I think this is an interesting story because probably, well, for me, and I would think a lot of listeners out there, if you've grown up with some sort of knowledge, this mm-hmm. is one of the main stories that gets told, mm-hmm. even in a kind of Sunday school room, mm-hmm. the Mary and Martha thing. And there's a lot of, we can kind of come into a story like this with a lot of
yeah.
preconceived notions, or I know right. the point
Which
of this.
One are you? Mm-hmm. Are you yeah. Mary or Martha?
Right, yeah. totally. And so I think it's kind of, I've just been enjoying coming to the Bible as an adult again, but through mm-hmm. the eyes almost of a child, of kind yeah. of like, wait, tell this to me like I don't know it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm an amateur. I'm learning here.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't, I think
this
we
is
forget.
My embroidery.
Yeah,
you know?
this is my embroidery. I'm going to read mm-hmm. the passage from Luke 10, and this is that story that you're talking about, the Mary and Martha mm-hmm. story. And this is, let's see, Luke 10, starting in 38, and I'm reading from the ESV. Now as they went on their way, Jesus entered a village, and a woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. And she had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to his teaching. But Martha was distracted with much serving, and she went up to him and said, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Tell her to help me. But the Lord answered her, Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things, but one thing is necessary. Mary has chosen the good portion, which will not be taken away from her. And so like this translation says the good portion. What does NIV say?
The NIV says Mary has chosen what is better.
Mm. So there it is. Mary has chosen what is better. But like the thing that she chose was to sit and listen, which I think is a really hard thing to choose, honestly. Like to me, I am much more comfortable busying myself with the little things behind the scenes. I'm a 100% behind the scenes person. Mm. It's like, just let me stay busy yeah. behind the scenes. I don't really want to have to be out front. I don't really want to have to. And also there's something about being busy that's like, you don't have to engage. Like you're a little bit checked out because you're busy, but it is a way of serving. She was distracted with much serving.
Well, and I think if you think about it culturally, I would say culturally there, this idea of hospitality, the idea of really preparing, I mean, it would have appeared to be the right thing to do.
Yeah, serious so, business to yes, have somebody into your home.
Yes, and I'm thinking, you know, in our like churchiness and our like, we know the right answerness, we want to say, well, of course, we just read what Jesus said. Mary chose the right thing. But at that immediate moment, she could have seemed lazy. She could have seemed not doing her duty.
Well, it's also rebellious. Mm-hmm. Like, she's sitting at the feet of a rabbi. And like, that wasn't cool. That wasn't a thing that you did. Yeah. Like, she was a woman sitting at the feet of a rabbi.
Right. Would that have been a normal? That wouldn't be a normal interaction.
No, that wouldn't have been normal. And it wouldn't have been normal for Jesus to teach her either, I don't think.
It would have been normal for her to make sure dinner was ready and get everything prepped. Mm-hmm. And that was the duty that showed her.
Yeah.
Her service and her, you know. So it's not really that weird that Martha would ask that or think that.
Right. No. I am, like I said, I am Team Martha. I'm like, somebody's going to get this stuff done. And, you know, like we could do that later. I'm constantly in my brain thinking about the things that I'll do after this stuff is done.
Right.
Like after the house is in order, like our home has been in mass chaos for 2 years now because we moved while our youngest was in the hospital. And so we never really like unpacked, like I don't even remember moving.
Sure.
And then, so we unpacked as you need things, which is a horrible way to unpack. And then, we came, you know, when he comes home, there's like a ton of medical supplies and there's just, it's like living in a shipping warehouse because we're constantly getting medical supplies. And then there's like Amazon deliveries because of COVID. And it's not it's fine. Everything's fine. Like, this is not a woe is me story, but it's like our home has always been a level of chaotic.
Sure.
And so I'm constantly, every single day, I think about what life is going to be like one day when I can get all of that under control. Mm-hmm. And like, that's a terrible way to spend your brain power every day thinking about like, oh, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do these important things, or I'm going to feel this way or experience this joy after this stuff is done. And so like,
well, there's a part of that where I think maybe it's also that you, in the same way that it's probably easier to sit down with a cup of coffee and read a good book when the dishes are done and when things are put away. Like, there's a part that's normal to kind of want that. The problem is, in circumstances and in real life, that's perfect scenario where the birds are chirping and the dishes are put away. That's not real reality. And I think that's interesting that in the NIV it says Mary has chosen the good portion. The word portion signifies and implies that there are multiple portions. That it's not just that the better would say like, oh, disregard this altogether. It's not that God's given us things to do. We do have work to do. Jesus was a carpenter. I mean, there's like
work in Genesis, we are commissioned to do work.
Yes. And so I think it's important for the listener, for you sisters out there, that you're not listening to this as if we're saying like, gosh, this scripture is basically telling us like, don't worry about the laundry that you have to put away today. Just sit at the feet of Jesus all day long and be spiritual about it. I mean, that can last a good 2 hours and you might be like playing praise and worship. And then you still have the laundry to do. That is a portion of your day. Mm-hmm. That is a portion. But I think, Amanda, what you're saying is the part where we're missing out is when we let the portion that won't ever be ideal dictate what we have continually at the foot of Jesus.
Right.
So it's there for us every single day from the moment we wake up. The power of Christ, the hope of Jesus, the provision of God through Jesus himself, that is for us. That is ours already every single day. But we run to the endless, unending, even the deception in thinking that we can somehow come to the end of the chaos. Mm-hmm. So every day we're working at, if I just work a little harder, that'll be settled. And then I can go sit at the foot of Jesus. But that's not really ever going to happen.
Right.
And so choosing the better portion, choosing that better is not simply saying, it's not really about, well, I'm going to choose to be spiritual and I'm not going to worry about the things that I've been given to do. Mm-hmm. It's that every single day there are multiple portions and we have to prioritize the portion that is unchanging, that will truly give us the power for all the other portions, you know?
So let's get practical on that, because, you know, you both are moms. You have substantial crews at home that you are, you know, nurturing and caring for.
Right.
And I think probably a lot of people out there probably are in similar boats, or even not. Like, I know even as a single person, there's a lot of things kind of clamoring for my attention.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, because the perception is you have all the time in the world.
Well, you
Taylor.
Know, that is true. There is kind of this myth that that us single people should be available for all things. And so I think so much of life isn't this choice between the good thing and the bad thing. It's like pretty great stuff, and God help me pick the best thing to do with my limited time that I have in this one day. Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering, practically for us, what does that look like for you day to day? How do you choose the good portion? What does that look like for your family, or even just you as a woman?
Yeah, that's
so
a great question.
When I was a young mom and really into formulas, I mean, I don't know if you remember back in those days where you were first-time mom and you thought there's a right way to make sure that child would be disciplined and trained up right the first time.
Sleep through the night, and like things like that.
Sleep training, first-time obedience, all those things. And those things are worth fighting for and worth, and there is a good way to train and not give up. But during that time, I was also pretty preoccupied with the idea of a 5:45 alarm clock and getting up and having my prescribed quiet time hour. And that was going to fuel me for the day. And you know what? There was a lot of good fruit from that choice. But it was also a choice that I could not maintain. And so the hoping in that choice and that better happening in that way, the idea that, oh, me choosing the better is going to happen at 5:45 in the morning and it's exactly going to be like this. Well, that crumbles when I can't keep that schedule, when my baby doesn't sleep through the night, or when life happens, or when heartaches happen and you find yourself anxious and crying in the middle of the night. And so you have to sleep in the morning and life happens, right? So suddenly you realize, okay, choosing the better portion, choosing Jesus, choosing to listen to him and not get busy, that actually can happen at any given moment, at any given time, but it has to be a heart choice. Mm-hmm. And I know it's kind of not the most practical. I mean, we all wish that there was a formula. I mean, Taylor, I wish you could just give me the exact way to make sure that, you know, we would all love that formula. But the answer is really that when we look at Mary and Martha, and we look at Martha being commended for what she chose, there are times when she probably should choose to go and do the dishes. But in that moment, she responded to Jesus' invitation. Jesus came and she said, yeah, this moment is about making sure that I am listening and I'm listening right now. Mm-hmm. And I don't know exactly what he said and how he started teaching. And we can't fill in those details. But I think a lot of times our busyness keeps us from listening and hearing the invitation in the first place. So maybe for me, at the age I'm at now in my mid-40s, I'm less preoccupied with what time, how long, where the checklist and where the boxes are, exactly whether or not I finished that particular Bible study in the amount of time that I said I was going to. But to be really aware that not even a drive to the grocery store is my time. That it's actually an opportunity for me to speak to the Lord and listen. Mm-hmm. And then listening isn't just listening to air, but to let the word of God dwell in me richly. So let the word be audible, be read to me, for me to be able to see the word. And so whatever it is, to be like, the Lord has something to say to me and I need to be more available mentally and emotionally. I mean, it's a fight every day. But I'm glad that I've broken away from feeling like it has to be one way or I should give up altogether.
Hey, this is Eiler with The Faithful Project. Relationships take work, especially the most important one you can have in your life, your relationship with yourself. And a lot of us will drop anything to go help someone we care about. We'll go out of our way to treat people well. But how often do we give ourselves the same treatment? For me, I've adopted a self-care practice that looks like daily time being quiet in the morning with my coffee. I like to do at least one bath a week, preferably in the middle of the week. Just relax, maybe watch a TV show. But I've also been to therapy, and it's been incredibly important, especially in these months after having a baby. This month, BetterHelp Online Therapy wants to remind you that you matter just as much as everyone else does. And therapy is a great way to make sure you show up for yourself. BetterHelp is online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. Give it a try and see why over 2 million people have used BetterHelp Online Therapy. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and Faithful Project listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/faithfulproject. That's BetterHelp.com/faithfulproject. I am a new parent, and because of that, I'm seeing the world from a brand new perspective. I'm carefully considering how to protect my daughter in this increasingly scary digital world. Though she's not old enough to even hold a phone yet, I'm thinking ahead to when she will. Did you know that the average American child is exposed to pornography online by age 13 and that it usually happens by accident? That's really overwhelming. But thankfully, there are ways being developed to help combat this, like the new app, Canopy. Canopy's app is for smartphones, tablets, and computers, and it makes the internet safe by blocking explicit images and videos on every single website. It also does a lot of other useful things that keep kids safer online and prevent exploitive situations, things like detecting and stopping inappropriate photo sharing. So you can check it out at canopy.us/faithfulproject and get 30 days free and 15% off the regular price forever when you use the promo code FAITHFULPROJECT at checkout. With Canopy, you'll never have to worry about what your child sees online. And that is a wonderful thing.
What about you, Amanda?
Mm-hmm. Well, that last thing that you just said, I think that's important because I don't know that we all feel worthy of sitting at the feet of Jesus. Mm-hmm. You know, that's of good. Like, can we sit at the feet of Jesus when the dishes aren't done or mm-hmm. when our project isn't complete or when we failed at something in our profession or when we've let down somebody we love or whatever? Yeah. Like, is it is it okay to just come and sit at the feet of Jesus mm-hmm. and receive mm-hmm. when we know how deficient we mm-hmm. are? And so that is a thing that's kind of a battle, an inner battle that I feel like, that I fight often and that, that Jesus fights for me, you know, mm-hmm. But I wonder if this story, like if we abandon kind of the circumstances of the story and pivot from like thinking about what was actually happening, you know, like she was serving and, you know, food, dishes, house, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then Mary was sitting and listening. If like we think about what Mary was choosing to do, I think it has more to do with the presence of God than the denial of responsibilities. Mm-hmm. Sure. Do you know what I mean? Like if we, and this is very much what you just said, but if we practice the presence of God, like practice being aware of God's nearness. You know, I find myself very often praying for God to be near to me or to others in certain situations. And I think that's okay to pray, but I've lately been trying to pray instead that I would be aware of God's Absolutely. Nearness or that yes. this person I'm praying for would be aware of God's nearness yes. because God is near. Yeah. And so just to practice being aware of God's presence. And I don't think that it always looks like the sitting at the feet of Jesus, which I mean, the myth of the early morning quiet time, which I know it's not a myth. It's a real thing. My mom, mm-hmm. I grew up, my mother, whom I love and adore, has always done an early morning quiet time. And I mean, and she is just a hero. I just like mm-hmm. love her so much. And I see the fruit of that so much. But aside from her example, like that kind of narrative that is pushed of like, well, this is the way. Walk in it. And it's like, well, that's not actually like, mm-hmm. you know, Jesus's way is the way. Yeah. It's not like there are things that we have added to sure. what it looks like to walk in step with the Spirit. Right. And so I want to learn from Mary in this moment is how it feels to be aware of the opportunity of like God's presence
yes.
and to seize it, yes. even though it's, you know, we talked in an earlier conversation in this room about the fear of being misunderstood. Mm-hmm. And like, I think Mary and Martha probably both felt misunderstood mm-hmm. in that mm-hmm. moment. But to do the thing, to go where God is, even if it doesn't look like the better mm-hmm. portion. I was also thinking about how when Jesus is like, this won't be taken away from her.
Yes.
That presence, like the dishes are going to pile up again. If we keep, mm-hmm. if we use that example, like you can clean the kitchen, mm-hmm. you know, I clean the kitchen, I leave 10 minutes later, stuff happens. And it's like, that is very quickly taken away from me, that investment of my time. Yeah. But like the time that we spend, even while doing other things mm-hmm. like embroidery, I must say, but like the time we spend doing other things, we can do that in God's presence. And
yeah.
And it feels like the payoff is different when yeah. we're just mindful of it.
I think what we're speaking to here is, I mean, the word even that keeps being repeated is the word presence. Mm-hmm. And that that you're both absolutely right, that this is less a story about what activity is better and mm-hmm. more what heart space are we living out of.
Right.
And I think for me, I was realizing that Mary reminds me in this story of some of my favorite people in the world. When I was thinking about some of my very best friends and what I love about them is I'm thinking of one woman in particular. And when I spend time with her, I always have the sense that she has all the time in the world, even though I know
love that
she doesn't, you know, who does have all the time in the world. But when you're talking to her, there's a sense she's with you. She's listening to
she's
you.
She's present.
She's not checking her things. You don't have the sense like, oh, you probably need to, you need to go. And, you know, there's just this very generous presence. I think that's the gift Jesus gives to Mary. And he's actually offering it to Mary and Martha. And Mary's the one who chooses to receive it and give it back to him. And I think so often Jesus isn't just teaching us how to spend time with him. He's teaching us how to spend time with other people.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
That's good.
And I think this is who I want to be. I want to be that whenever I'm with those friends of mine,
that.
I think, can I be more like this? Not in a jealous, competitive sense, but in a, this is really a something that I want to put on and a way of being in the world that is so counter to our hurried lives. When Jesus says in this passage, he says, Martha, you're worried and upset about many things. And I think what's the antidote to being worried and upset about many things? It's presence, you know, it's kind of this healing thing that gets us to stop worrying about all those things that are going to go wrong or, you know, what about this? And I can imagine all those things Martha was thinking. Mm-hmm. I'm not good in the kitchen. So if I was in charge of, if I was in charge of a whole dinner party, I would be just a mess. So maybe I'd be on the floor with Mary just because I'm like, this is better for everybody.
We're just going to get takeout. It's going to be fine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think I do struggle. And this has been, I mean, gosh, we're right in the middle of what's been an anxious year for a lot of people. And I think even maybe people who aren't feeling regularly like they're normally anxious, but this has just...
Yeah.
There's a lot of fears and a lot of worries that have risen to the surface. And I think it's really good for us to spend time thinking about what do we do with that? You know, how do we live? I guess, how do we be present in that? Mm-hmm. And how do we let the presence of God soothe some of those anxieties that we have?
Yeah.
I think when we look at the year that we've had and the application of, you know, how we all respond in a year like this, but then look at Mary and Martha, isn't it kind of apparent that we operate out of our beliefs, that we really do, our actions betray what we think theologically, which is just a big word for what we believe about God, right? So, I mean, I think a lot of times because of who we are, we look at the story and we immediately, like Amanda said, we immediately go, which one are you? What are you more
like? Right.
And then how do I become the right one that gets commended by Jesus, you know, like how do I realign and do the right thing? But I think if I take a step back and look at the story, I go, okay, both women did what they thought was right based on what they believe about what God wants of them. Mm-hmm. So it's, I mean, really all of us, the way we are responding to a disappointing year, the way we're responding to anxious unknowns, we're all going to act out of our beliefs and in response to our theology. And for me, this year, I can see where I had some false hopes. I can see where I was desiring things to go a certain way as a comfort. I can see what happens when I get a medical diagnosis for anybody I love or for myself that I don't love. I'm like, oh my goodness. And suddenly I realize, oh, wow, my response to that betrays what I actually think about God's sovereignty. Mm-hmm. Because really, you can only see what you actually believe by how you respond to things. Mm-hmm. Not that we're all going to respond correctly, but at any given moment, but you see what your immediate natural inclination is and then how you respond as you remember the truth, right? We all have to do that repeatedly. So it kind of is a good reminder for us that we will all, like, it's a good testing moment to say, when I respond to any demand upon me with more busyness, with more like, let me manipulate the situation and get everything lined up correctly, then that kind of betrays. And I mean, obviously I'm a Martha too, and a lot of us are, you know, it shows, it betrays that my mind naturally goes towards thinking that God desires that I prove that I'm loyal, that I'm prove that I work hard, that I'm one of his best daughters, that I'm going to do a good job. But perhaps Mary's response really demonstrates her theology and her, you know, that's our fancy way of saying that. But really, what did she think about Jesus? What did she think? She was engaged and captured by his glory. Like, she really was like, he is everything that is satisfying, so therefore I want to be here. And so I don't know. It's just, it's kind of more than just convicting. It's a good mirror for me to remind myself that we all have an opportunity. Jesus wasn't like, you're doomed, Martha. He was more like, hey, this is an opportunity to recognize this is the portion that you can choose too. You know, we can adjust, readjust.
And it seems really tender to me that Jesus would say this to her. Mm-hmm. I know we're technically supposed to be talking about Mary, but that Jesus would take time to say, Martha, Martha, you're worried and upset about many things. And when you were talking, Taylor, about that, about the worried and upset about many things, I mean, it's easy for me to be worried and upset about many things. It's less easy for me to be that when I am looking at Jesus.
Yep.
When I'm like really intently looking and listening, like, what did he say? I'm going to read the words again. I'm going to look right at it. I'm going to focus on him. It doesn't mean that upsetting things aren't happening,
sure,
or that they are somehow better. It just means that I have a focal point, you know, like, I'm going to look. It's like when you like look at a place on the wall so you don't fall over or whatever. Yes. Is that a thing that happens? Our brains do that, right?
Yep. Yes.
That sounded like I have personal issues that I'm dealing with. But like, you know, where like if you close your eyes, it's harder to stand up straight, right? Mm-hmm. But if you like focus on something, you can get your balance. And so like when I mean, really dark, heavy, painful things can be happening. And I don't even know that it lessens the pain sometimes to look at Jesus, but it is the promise that like, okay, it's who he is. It's that, I mean, if Mary and Martha knew what was coming and what he would do, and the way he would lay down his life, but we have the benefit of knowing that. So when we focus on the presence of Jesus, we know that whole story. And we know who it is, exactly who it is we're focusing on.
Yeah.
And there's something very steadying about that and peaceful about that.
Oh yeah. I love that. And I think, so what's really great about, Mary and Martha in this story is, you know, a lot of times with Bible characters, you get maybe one little story or anecdote, but we actually get another interaction with Mary and Jesus. And so, Amanda, will you read?
Oh, sure. Okay, so the story is in John 11. And so the story goes that Lazarus is sick. And Lazarus is the brother of Mary and Martha. So Lazarus is sick. Mary and Martha send word to Jesus and say, he's sick, please come and heal him. It says, Lord, he whom you love is ill, because Jesus loved these people. They were his friends. And Jesus says, he's not going to die. This is for the glory of God. So Jesus actually waits. He stays where he is for 2 days, and then he makes the journey. And so by the time he gets there to Mary and Martha, Lazarus is already dead, and he's been in the tomb, it says, 4 days. That's in verse 17. And so when he finally does come, Martha sees him. She runs out and she says, Lord, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died. But Jesus says to her, essentially, this is where he says, I'm the resurrection and the life. Mm-hmm. He who believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this? Mm-hmm. I love that. He asks Martha, do you believe mm-hmm. this? And she says, yes, I believe this. And so then, so she goes and tells Mary, because Mary has been in the house. And so here comes Mary out to see Jesus. And listen to what she says. This is verse 32. Now, when Mary came to where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet, saying to him, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in his spirit and greatly troubled. And he said, where have you laid him? And they said to him, Lord, come and see. And Jesus wept. Hmm. I love that they say the exact same thing to him separately mm-hmm. because they've been talking about this. They've been waiting for him.
Yes.
Then like Jesus can do this. Mm-hmm. He will come. Mm-hmm. And then he didn't. And he died. And they both said the same thing to him. If you'd been here, he wouldn't have died. There's a lot of faith in that statement itself.
There is.
But their reality
and acknowledging of what Jesus was capable of.
But didn't do.
And they don't know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I love, I think what stood out to me just listening to you read just now was, and Mary fell at his feet, because we just read this yep. previous account, and it said, where do we find Mary in that story? Sitting at the feet of Jesus. Once again, she's at the feet of Jesus. This time, she's collapsed, mm-hmm. you know, in her mm-hmm. grief. But she's in the same
yep.
place.
And in between the two, when she anoints his feet yep. with oil yep. and wipes his feet with her hair,
yep.
she's at the feet of Jesus.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So all three pictures of Mary, mm-hmm. she's at Jesus'
That's
feet.
Right. So this is, it's a unique gift we have, the life of Mary and the story of Mary, mm-hmm. because we get to see her in such different moments of life, you mm-hmm. know, in some ordinary moments and some really painful mm-hmm. things. But we get to kind of watch this dynamic sort of unfold between them.
Yeah. But John had a choice in writing the story to give the details that he gives, right? And the details that he chose to give was to indicate that Mary really would lay everything out and mm-hmm. would vulnerably place herself at the yeah. feet of Jesus and truly like desire his presence and acknowledge his presence mm-hmm. and yeah. know that his presence is life-changing.
Yeah. yeah.
That's the detail he keeps bringing in.
And we don't have the physical incarnate Jesus mm-hmm. to, you know, here to, mm-hmm. to lay ourselves at his feet. But like, that's what we were just talking about mm-hmm. with like the presence, to practice the presence of God and be aware of the presence of Jesus is this. It's to do that with our spirit and with ourselves and the way that we serve and the way that we walk through life and the way mm-hmm. that we love our people and do our work and rest mm-hmm. and all of these things. I think that we can, it's hard to get practical. I love mm-hmm. the like, let's get practical. But I think there are ways to do that, to be at the feet, put ourselves at the feet of Jesus in all of those things that we do.
Yeah.
Like it's a posture of the heart, which is a yeah. fun phrase. It's hard yeah. to define.
Yeah. Well, I think one thing Mary does so well, and I think a lot of women can find themselves in the story of Mary and in the person of Mary, is this idea. We were talking about this earlier today at lunch, but this idea that so many of us have as women, as, and not all, I don't want to put every woman in this category, but as so many of us are natural feelers, we,
yeah.
you know, the emotions that we carry can be really strong.
They're big.
And we have maybe heard in our lives at some point, it's too much.
Yeah.
You know, I can remember being told that a time or two mm-hmm. growing up, just like, it's too much. It's too dramatic. I think what I hear in Mary's response to Jesus is almost, she's not really worried about being too much, you know,
because she's a lot. I mean, she's,
can you imagine just kind of like you're at dinner and then all of a sudden like Mary's washing, you know, Jesus's feet with her hair, or she's like, her response could easily, you could easily see where she's like, wow, this is your, you know, but that every single time that she brings her full self to yeah. the feet of Jesus, she actually moves him, you know, to the point where what you read, he mm-hmm. said, Jesus was deeply troubled, you know, and he wept.
And he wept. It's the only time we mm-hmm. see that. I mean, surely it happened more than once, but that's the record we have.
Well, it's a promise. What a promise to us, I think, just that in our biggest feelings, in our deepest grief, that Jesus meets us in those, you know, that our tears literally would move his compassion.
And he didn't respond to them with reprimand. Like when Martha came out, he responded with promises. Like, I'm the resurrection and the life. Mm-hmm. If you believe in me, even if you die, you will live. And they didn't know what that meant, but he said, do you believe this? And Martha said, yes, I believe that. Could she have explained it back to him? Probably not. You know, like, yes. And then when Mary did the same thing and came to him, his response to her was, when Jesus saw her weeping, he was deeply moved in his spirit and greatly troubled. Jesus was greatly troubled, even though he knew. He had already said, this is for the this is for my glory. So he knew that. But he's also a man of sorrows, acquainted with grief. Like he gets it. And that's such a unique, there's no other God. Mm-hmm. There's no other God who gets it. Mm-hmm. Just Jesus.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. To learn more about our music, books, merchandise, or when a Faithful event will be coming near you, please visit us at faithfulproject.com or follow us on social media at Faithful Project. The Faithful Project is brought to you by Compassion International, Integrity Music, and David C. Cook Publishing. To find out how you can play a vital role in releasing children from poverty, please visit compassion.com/faithful. Until next time, now go and speak.